It's showtime, folks!
Ooh, so this is the thanks I get for working overtime.
Overtime!
Hello, everyone out there. Welcome to the Fan Run Studios of Fox Sports Knoxville. Overtime is the show, clocking in at 6:01 on your Tuesday, taking you up until 8 o'clock, finishing a hot one out here in East Tennessee. Hottest day of the year so far in Knoxville. Hope everybody has been sheltering themselves from the heat. If you are outside, hopefully you have a pool. Hopefully you have a source to cool yourself down as well out there. But we are coming to you live from the air-conditioned, icy Arctic studios of Fan Run Radio here.
Feels great.
Absolutely feels amazing. Live on 105.7 FM, AM 1340. Online at foxsportsknoxville.com and the live stream there. Anywhere in the world on your Fan Run Radio app. And you can see our faces on Periscope as well, Tanner Carson, Julia Ramsey, and we got Will Stevens on the board again. Day two, post-Cole here. I already feel like this is natural.
I know.
You know, no offense to Cole, but I feel like, you know what, it's easy. It's easy. We're going with the flow here.
Yep.
New faces coming in here, but it's okay. Will's, he might be young, but he's a professional.
Yeah,
he's a young professional.
I try to be.
A young professional. Should we call him a yuppie then? If he's a young professional? That's what they called the young professionals back in the 80s. I don't know.
Yeah, sure.
Yuppie sounds insulting. Let's not call him that.
Yeah, it really does.
Let's actually not call him that, though. But set to get into it here. Great stuff lined up for you for 2 hours, ending your Fan Run Radio rotation of content today. Starting everything off. Man, oh, man. I remember talking to you guys yesterday about the Home Run Derby, MLB All-Star Game tonight, but always the day before the All-Star Game. You have your best sluggers in Major League Baseball out there competing in the Home Run Derby. Last night was set to be really fun. You had a lot of young, up-and-coming, fast-rising home run hitters that were competing in the Derby. And plus, they were competing for a prize of $1 million. To boot, I didn't tune in from the very start just because I kind of forgot it was on for a second.
Mm-hmm.
But then I remembered, oh wait, the Derby's on. Let me switch over to it. And as soon as I switched over, got to see the Braves' Ronald Acuña Jr.
Yeah, he started off strong, didn't he?
He started off very strong, but then after he advanced to the next round, which was, you know, good for him. I wanted Ronnie to do good.
Mm-hmm.
As a Braves supporter. Then I saw, and the whole nation saw, if you had not been introduced to him yet, Vladimir Guerrero Jr., the son of a pretty great hitter himself,
mm-hmm.
and Vlad Sr., he puts on the show of all shows out there. When he went head-to-head in the semifinal rounds against Jock Peterson. Now, to preface this, round one, Vlad Guerrero Jr. hit 29 home runs. That was already a record for the most in one round.
Jeez, that's a lot.
Completely insane.
Cranking him.
Then he gets into this battle with Jock Peterson of the Dodgers. And they go head-to-head. I mean, three tiebreakers. It took three tiebreakers for Vlad Jr. to finally best Peterson 40-39.
Oh, wow.
In total home runs, so Vlad hit 29 again. He came a few feet away from hitting 30. He was really going for that 30. Jock Peterson kind of started out a little slower, and then near the end, he was just cranking him out, just out of the park, out of the park,
mm-hmm.
out of the park. It forced the one-minute period tie-breaking. Well, it was still tied after that. Then, for the first time ever, they had a swing-off. And it is what it sounds like it is.
Hmm.
Each batter, they get three swings.
3.
They get 3 swings. Try your best to get 3 home runs out of them.
Yeah.
And after the first swing off, still tied.
Jeez.
So I had to take the third one. Peterson came up one short. It was absolutely insane. They both had a 29 home runs around record in the 4-minute time limit, plus the 30-second bonus time, too. Had that 3-swing playoff, like I said. Said before this year's Derby, only 6 players had hit 40 home runs in an entire event, much less a single round.
Wow.
And you can tell it took a lot out of both men because Vlad Guerrero Jr. for hitting, I need to find his total home run number. It was absolutely insane the amount that he hit. He still did not win the home run derby. That went to Pete Alonso of the New York Mets. I'm glad, you know, the Mets are going to win something this year, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah, because not much else is up there, though. But, man, that was absolutely insane. Either you get a chance to, because I know it was blowing up social media. It was blowing up my Twitter timeline. And if you try to turn over and see what was going on, or at least see some video highlights, because these young kids out there knocking in dinger after dinger after dinger, it was very impressive. And yeah. It's something that, you know, for baseball, not really America's pastime anymore, but man, that's something that gets a lot of good attention at least.
Yeah, especially since they're cranking them out as much as they were.
Absolutely insane amount. And on top of this too, this brings up a conversation too. Just in the games in general, there's a huge rise in the amount of home runs being hit.
Yes.
And it's been on the upswing for a couple of years now. Listen to this number when I find this here. So just in the first half of the season, throughout all baseball, 3,691 homers.
Whew, that's a lot.
If they keep up the pace, it will be at the end of the season 6,668.
Jesus.
Do you know what the record already is for one season? It was set in 2017. So this was recent.
What is it?
Just 6,105. So yes. It's set to be obliterated by 550-something.
Yeah. No, it's way past it.
Yeah. Do y'all like the amount of home runs? I mean, does this make baseball more exciting to you? Because there's a lot of people in MLB, specifically pitchers, they're not happy with this. In fact, they think the MLB is conspiring against them.
Yeah, that's what I've seen. I'm not a huge baseball watcher, but I think the home runs are really exciting. I think it's really good for the game that they're hitting them more often. You know, it makes things interesting. Keeps the competition up.
I think it does too. I'm always someone who enjoys offense, no matter what sport I'm watching. Because I'm always more of an offensive guy in football. My football hero, philosophical wise, is Mike Leach, the air raid offense.
Yeah.
Love the points, love all the yards. Same for basketball. I love high scoring, jack up a bunch of threes, offenses in basketball as well. So it's pretty much the same for the long ball in baseball as well.
Yeah, I agree.
You're coming off just a few years ago. It was earlier in the decade. I remember you had a problem with people hitting a lot of home runs. It was really a pitcher-dominated league.
Not so
you
much
were concerned.
Anymore.
People were concerned. You were going back to the dead ball era of the early 20th century. It's just going to be pitcher dominated. And then all of a sudden, there's been an uptick the last few years. That brings me to my point that a lot of your notable pitchers out there in MLB, they think that the MLB is purposely juicing the balls.
That's crazy.
They think they're purposely altering the baseballs so that there's more flight to them. Justin Verlander came out. And he's going to be the AL starting pitcher tonight's All-Star game. This is your starting AL pitcher. He's out there saying that Rob Manfred and baseball, they are purposely juicing the baseballs.
Wow.
Verlander, quote, used the phrase a bleeping joke.
Jeez.
He believes 100%, quote, that the MLB has implemented juice balls to increase offense. You've also had other notable starting pitchers throughout baseball, like Jacob deGrom of the Mets, and you also had Max Scherzer of the Nationals. He said that the baseball seems to be traveling differently. And it's interesting as well here, because just last year, Rawlings, if you played baseball mm-hmm. as a little leaguer, you know Rawlings.
Yep.
Rawlings makes so much baseball material. They make baseballs, actually, most notably. Mm-hmm. MLB bought Rawlings last year.
Yeah.
So now you have people thinking that the MLB, you know, they're over Rawlings. They're over the facilities in which these baseballs are stored. They're over the manufacturing of them. They think that they're altering the baseball-making process here to increase offense. Verlander said, MLB owns Rawlings, and you've got Manfred up there saying it might be the way they center the pill. I have no clue. Something about the actual baseball part. I don't know what that means, center the pill. He says, they own the bleeping company. If any other $40 billion company bought out a $400 million company and the product changed dramatically, it's not a guess as to what happened. We all know what happened. Manfred, the first time he came in, what did he say? He said he wanted more offense. All of a sudden, he comes in, the balls are juiced. It's not a coincidence. We're not idiots.
Jeez.
Manfred, of course, has denied this.
Yeah, of course.
He said that MLB owners, they do not want more home runs. The owners don't. They're actually concerned that there's too many home runs.
Yeah.
So that's going to be his stance on it. You know what I have to say about Verlander and the rest, and y'all can agree, disagree. Pitch better.
Yeah, I guess.
Quit complaining. Quit complaining. You're still a pro. It's not. You're not being conspired against.
Yeah.
You're not being conspired against. I don't believe that. And you know what? Even if they were, for a fan's perspective, I like this.
Oh, yeah. It's great for the fans.
Julia, I'm like you. I'm not like a huge baseball watcher. I'm not saying down every night that the Braves are playing, taking 2.5 hours out of my night just to watch every single pitch. I don't do that. You know what would get me to watch more games? There was more offense.
Mm-hmm.
And there was higher scoring. I respect good pitching ability. I do.
It's not as exciting.
Yeah, no, it's not. It definitely is. And really, to just the average observer, you can have this same type of conversation when it comes to defensive dominated games in football. To the average observer, that's not going to be as entertaining.
Right.
That doesn't mean it's not to be respected, but, you know, for me in baseball, I want to be entertained.
Yeah.
That home run derby was entertaining.
It was.
They may have juiced those balls in the home run derby last night. You know what? I don't care.
Yeah.
That's fun. It's fun when you're having a 3-time sudden death type of playoff or a swing-off go on.
No doubt.
In just the semifinal round. That's a lot more fun than, you know, trying to see who's going to get to 20 homers first or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Just that's a snooze fest compared to that.
Yeah, I agree.
So, do we think the MLB might be conspiring? Will, you can get in on this too, because are you a huge baseball watcher?
Not necessarily. I mean, I'll tune in every now and then when I'm scrolling through ESPN. If there's nothing on, of course, like during the summertime like it is now, I'll watch a couple games here and there. But not a huge baseball fan. But even then, I agree with you. Just pitch better. Just avoid the bat. You're a pro for a reason. If you're going to throw the ball, it's going to get hit anyways. If it's going longer because it's juiced, too bad. Just avoid the bat when you're throwing the ball.
And the thing is, too, I mean, how can the players even prove that MLB is trying to conspire against them in the manufacturing of the baseballs?
You can't.
It seems like something they just can't do.
No.
And so, also, with the conspiring against them type of deal, it's still going to, like, go in the long run towards them, because it's going to bring more money into the league because people are going to be tuning in more. So regardless of if your stats go down, you're probably going to have a little bit fatter of a paycheck if you're a good pitcher, because the league's going to be rising with the rise of home runs too.
That's what I'm thinking too. What, and this might be more controversial, talking about juicing baseballs back in the day of players juicing. The home run chase of the late 90s, even though I don't remember it happening, but I remember seeing, go back and watch, you can watch highlights of it on mm-hmm. YouTube, Mark McGwire versus Sammy Sosa, that chase they did all throughout 1998 to get the home run record. Of course, you had Sammy Sosa shatter that just a few seasons later. You know, they all ended up using PEDs. Obviously, right. They're not being clean, but the thing is, I've been of like this almost radical mindset that, you know what, make damn PEDs legal. Let everybody do them. If everybody's doing them, nobody's at an unfair advantage.
Exactly.
That was because that's fun. The homers are fun. People trying to
get. People want to watch that.
60-plus home runs in the season.
Yeah.
It's fun. More ticket sales. Higher ratings. It's just more interest in general. Verlander, by the way, he has been pitching good this season. 2.98 ERA, 153 strikeouts, and 126 and two-thirds innings. However, he has allowed a baseball leading 26 home runs. So that's why he's a little salty.
Yeah, I can understand that. And he's, like you said, one of the best in the league.
Starting for the AL tonight.
Yeah. If he's complaining about it, you know it's an issue. And you know all the other pitchers are stressed out about it, too.
Well, you know what? If I'm pitchers and I'm getting taken yard several times a start, I would be thinking that my only would be conspiring against me as well.
Yeah.
You know what? If it's proven, okay, you cross that bridge when you get there. If it's proven that the baseballs are being juiced by baseball, by Major League Baseball.
Yeah, until then, just step it up a little bit.
But until then... Hey, you know what they said back in the day in that that Nike ad? Chicks dig the long ball.
Yeah.
Guys do
That's
too.
That's true.
Guys do too.
Everybody
as well.
Does.
Everybody digs that long ball. We got to hit the first break of the program here. 865-546-8200 is our phone number. If you want to hop on the Fan Run phone lines here. Got a lot more coming your way. You're listening to Overtime. Keep it tuned right here to Fan Run Radio. I can't not get over how much, what's the right word here? How much more slender Gronk looks?
Really? Does he? I haven't seen pictures.
Oh.
Is he slimming down?
He, you can tell that this man's done with football.
Wow.
Look at that.
Holy moly.
I mean, he still looks fit and everything. Skinny. I mean, he's still Gronk.
Yeah, he's fit.
He still looks like just a gym bro dude.
He's not. In football shape.
But it's like whatever supplements he was taking while he was with the Patriots, he's clearly been off those. He clearly hasn't had to be on those for a little
Took
bit
a
here.
Break from those.
Apparently, he was also helping throw and catch some balls with Tom Brady a few days ago. It's led to some people thinking he may be trying to make a comeback. Mm. I'm like, what's he going to come back as a punter? Like, he doesn't.
Yeah, he's not.
I don't know.
Tight end material.
I don't know
now.
This guy can take hits anymore. Like, he looks fine, but I'm scrolling through his Instagram.
Oh. He's definitely lost a lot of muscle.
I'm trying to. Look at this. He's on stage.
Jeez.
What concert is he on?
Not as intimidating.
Oh, he's on stage with Luke Bryan.
What?
Luke Bryan wearing a Gronk jersey. I guess he was at Gillette. Or somewhere up there in Boston.
I would not think he was a Luke Bryan fan. Interesting.
I mean, Luke Bryan's kind of a bro. I mean, he does do bro country.
Yeah.
And who's more of a bro than Rob Gronkowski?
He's definitely a bro.
You know what he may actually be slimming up to do, right? There's
no,
been rumors that he may get the WWE a shot.
Oh, wow. Would you like that?
As a wrestling fan? Yeah, I would.
That'd be really good for the
Hell,
WWE.
Yes, I would. Especially if it can be done the right way, too, because, he's gotten involved before. There was a WrestleMania they had a few years ago. He gave, I forgot who he gave, a spear to, but, he got in the three-point stance in the ring corner. He just gave this dude just, a big spear.
That'd be pretty cool.
In the middle of the ring. He's best friends with Mojo Rawley, who's a WWE wrestler. Not a good one, though, but he's a wrestler nonetheless. But he may be trying to get more, what's the word here? Maybe trying to get more aerodynamic.
Yeah.
Maybe trying to be
branch out a little bit.
A lot quicker in the ring if it does come for that. So that's just something that's caught me by surprise. Though something else that has caught some people by surprise here. Go to this ESPN Plus article that was released today. David M. Hale has this piece here talking about the 2019 college football season. And some under-the-radar players who are ready for a breakout season, according to him. Let's go into this here. Pop quiz. Who had the lowest interception rate in the SEC last season? Well, you're probably thinking Tua Tagovailoa, right?
That was my first thought.
He says it's a good guess, but it's wrong. How about Jake Fromm? He was terrific for Georgia. Well, that's the wrong answer, too. The answer, you might be surprised to learn, and if you remember his stats from last year, at least his touchdown to interception ratio, the lowest interception rate in the SEC belonged to one, Jarrett Garantano.
Not surprising, because I do remember he did barely ever threw an interception last year.
And just 246 pass attempts, only threw three interceptions.
Yeah.
Despite playing but one of the country's worst offensive lines, Hill writes, we know that very well. He said, one more quiz question. Who had the better season? Yes, player A and player B here. Player A, 59.4% completion rate, 7.8 yards per pass, 3.4-1 touchdown interception ratio, 35% conversions on third down throws. Or player B, 62.2% completion percentage, also 7.8 yards per pass, 4-1 touchdown interception ratio, 41% conversions on third down throws. He said you probably get the nod to player B.
Mm-hmm.
Well, once again, that's Jarrett Garantano. The other player, Oregon's Justin Herbert, who is slated by Maine to be a first-round pick next year. Long story short, Hill writes, Garantano was pretty darn good last season, even if you didn't notice. And, of course, the reason you probably didn't notice is because Tennessee was pretty bad.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you, Dave. I appreciate that.
It's a good
that.
Way to put it.
Oh, how about this for a statistic right here? Garantano was sacked on 8.2% of his dropbacks. 106th in FBS.
Mm. Yeah.
Ranked 119th in FBS, but 39% of his throws coming under pressure. And his rushing offense ranked last in the SEC. However, Hell writes, when Garantano wasn't buried under the pass rush, he was developing into a premier quarterback.
Yeah.
It was just a little tough to notice. He has this quote from Pruitt here talking about how smart Garantano is, how football comes easily to him, has a good arm strength, he's tough. Where have we heard Jarrett Garantano's tough before? I've never heard anybody say that. He's a good athlete. So, Hell's writing here that Garantano has some room to grow. And he thinks that under Jim Chaney that his role in the offense is supposed to expand this year as well. Only threw 12 touchdown passes last season to go along with the three interceptions. So we know just by watching games last year, you know, the three interceptions, yes, Garantano didn't make too many mistakes himself when it came to that. But at the same time, he's not out there, you know, in an air raid offense where he's having 400-plus pass attempts per year.
Right.
He's not doing that. However, I mean, that's a good enough sample size, though. He thinks that doubling the 12 touchdown passes might be a good starting point this year. He thinks Garrett Thomas is capable of the 20-plus touchdown passes.
Yeah, I think he should throw it more.
He said the better news for Tennessee fans, however, is that Garrett Thomas' development could be matched by that offensive line in 2019. Pruitt has depth at long last, including five-star freshman Darnell Wright and Wandae Morris, which could allow Garantano to reach his potential. It says Garantano isn't the only emerging star to fly under the radar last season. However, he lists a bunch of other players who are under the radar, about to have a big breakout year. I'm stopping all over the place here. Got quarterback at Virginia as well. So he's going across college football here. But the main point, man, he's using Garantano as this example. These players who are supposed to have a big breakout year in 2019. I've been seeing a lot of love like this. And I don't think I can disagree that the opportunity for growth is there.
It is very much so there.
The thing is this next year, you know, how much, if Garantano has a mediocre year, let's just say, how much of that, how much are we going to keep blaming on everything else of the offense? Or, you know, he's been here for multiple years. Jim Chaney is a quarterback whisperer by every stretch of the imagination,
right,
which should help out tremendously. If everything else goes right and he still doesn't reach that potential of the guy in high school who was rated higher than Jalen Hurts, if he still doesn't reach that, then you really can't say you didn't try to help him.
Yeah. We have our answer.
So, I don't know. How about this, though? Would you go as far as saying Garantano's ready to be one of the breakout stars of college football?
I think he could be. I really do. If we improve on the offensive line, you know, it's going to be, all the attention's going to be on him and how he adjusts to that. And we saw last year against Auburn, you know, the flashes he did have, throwing the ball more, and, you know the potential's there. So if the offensive line improves, that might be his opportunity to break out.
real quick before I throw it to Will to get his thoughts on this as well. The Auburn game, I've seen a lot of detractors, and I will say I'm neither on the side of the Garantano stands or the haters. I think
you
it's very it's very foolish to be on one side of that fence or the other. Of course, I should say, as Tennessee fans, if you're diehard, support the team 100%. Support the players. Do what you want to do. But you can't blindly think that he's one of the best quarterbacks in college football already.
Yeah.
Could he develop into one of the better ones in the SEC this year under Jim Chaney? Absolutely could.
Yep.
But what have we seen so far? Someone that has potential. That's what his potential. So
time to live up to the potential.
I'm someone who's cautiously optimistic.
Yeah.
But the detractors that say about the Auburn game, how much of that was him trying to find Josh Palmer, Juwan Jennings on those tough third-down throws? How much was it just your dudes getting those 50-50 balls?
He is lucky. He has really good receivers so I can catch it with a ball anywhere near their reach.
It's a good skill to have, converting tough third and long situations like that. But at the same time, man, you can't. You're not going to get bailed out like that every single game.
No.
You may have to do more to put your offense in better positions in plays prior to that, so you don't have 3rd-and-10, 3rd-and-11. So it's 3rd-and-4, 3rd-and-3.
Mm-hmm.
It's those little baby steps right there. But, Will, I'm going to throw it over to you. You're the one who sent me this article here. What do you think about this preseason hype for Jarrett Garantano, at least when it comes to David Hale of ESPN?
I'm excited. I've always thought Garantano ever since, I think it was like my seventh grade year, we got him signed, and I was very excited about it, and that was when I was really getting into college
football.
You
make me feel so old. Oh, my God.
My apologies.
It's okay.
But I'm excited. I've always thought he was a little bit underrated. I never thought he was going to be a breakout player or on the Heisman watch or lead us to a national championship or anything like that, but I'm glad he's finally getting a little bit of kudos from ESPN, who doesn't necessarily like us all of that much. But I think if we can actually get a rushing attack going besides just protecting him, but giving him a second option so it distracts a little bit from his throwing ability,
mm-hmm.
and maybe we can take some deep field shots. But if we don't have a running game, I don't see him even being a breakout star this season. I think our rushing attack is too weak.
And that comes with the point of, hey, Chaney's supposed to fix more. I mean, you're paying him the money to fix more than just Jarrett Garantano. It's make this overall offensive scheme much more dynamic than was under Tyson Elton. I think if you're like 2% more dynamic than what Tyson Elton brought to the table, that's a major improvement because, oh, that offense was so tough to watch last year.
It was really hard.
Good thing, at least though, Will, when it comes to this rushing attack too, a lot of people were expecting big things out of Ty Chandler this year. I would be as well. I would expect him to get the starting nod at running back. But, however, he's not your dude who's going to get 20-plus rushing touches per game. Now, he might get 20-plus touches when it comes to, you know, not only carries as a receiver out of the backfield, but also use him in the receiving game. He has tools of an Alvin Kamara light. Now, I'm not comparing. I'm just saying he's that type of player. I think he can be. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be a whole team process. It's not coming down to one guy, you know, as we saw last year. There's so many things that could have went right for the offense during certain games, but the offensive line was trash. Then you had running game could be trash one day.
Yep.
Everything just needs to click a little bit more here. And you just look through last year's Garantano stats. You had the games where you had the flashes. I don't know if he can recreate exactly as good the numbers they had in the Auburn game. In a type of game like that, 21-32, 328 yards, had 2 touchdowns as well. I think he had a great game against South Carolina for what that scheme was supposed to be. It was supposed to be a game of a lot of short, quick passes.
And that's what they did.
Carved that South Carolina defense kind of like death by 1,000 paper cuts type of thing. 27-39, 207 yards, 2 touchdowns, no interceptions. You know, great theme here. A lot of games with 0 interceptions. 2 out of the 3 interceptions last season came against Florida.
Mm-hmm.
You know, by far his worst game. That was the worst game for pretty much the entire team as well.
Yeah. All around just bad performance.
Win against Kentucky. Now, a number that's not going to jump out at you, but 12 of 20, 197 yards, 2 touchdowns, no interceptions. Mm-hmm. I think that was also the that was the best game of the entire last season for the offensive line as well.
Yes,
Garantano only got sacked once. You know, that one sack coming at the hands of a first-round draft pick in Josh Allen.
Right.
You know, you were going up against a very good Kentucky defense at that. But then just, man, some of the bad habits, though, they showed themselves against Vanderbilt. The whole team collapsed.
Hmm.
Only 13 of 29, 139 yards. Only one touchdown, and then he threw a pick as well.
Yeah. But like you said, that the whole team just went down in flames in that game.
It's there. I think he has good football IQ. Obviously, he has the leadership mentality. He's not sure on confidence either.
Yeah.
Did you all see his tweet today at Peter Burns of the SEC Network?
Did not.
There's some conversation here. I'm going to find it. But it was basically talking about, you know, how much is Garantano going to improve in this offense under Jim Chaney as well? Yeah. Peter Burns, he was talking to somebody else. He said, Fromm was really comfortable. Talking about Jake Fromm. Fromm was really comfortable with Jim Chaney. How will that help Jarrett in Knoxville? Garantano simply replies, and this was at 5 o'clock today. He said, lots.
Mm-hmm.
It will help lots.
So, that's good to hear.
He's got the confidence.
Yeah.
He has that confidence, at least. I'm rooting for him, but...
We need confidence.
If he's out there in the BYU game, not completing 50% of his passes, holding on to the ball too long, then I'm going to be, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe this time for this experiment's running out.
Especially if we're seeing improvement in the offensive line.
Man, that would help so many other things as well.
Yeah.
Save us, Wanye. Save us, Darnell.
Save us.
Come back, Trey Smith.
We need you.
That just help us up front, first and foremost. We got to hit another break here. 865-546-8200 to hop on the Fan Run phone lines as well. We got some more preseason hype to get into. We just talked about Jarrett Garantano. Now you have another outlet talking about Tennessee as a team being a potential sleeper as well. We'll get that to you on the other side. You're listening to Overtime. Keep it here on Fox Sports Knoxville Fan Run Radio. We'll touch on this list, too, real quick, just because we're all about this hype here, whether it's deserved or otherwise. 247 Sports, they have 10 of the top 10 potential sleepers for 2019, talking about the teams. Just talked about the ESPN piece, if you missed it, talking about Jarrett Garantano being a one of the potential breakout sleeper stars for 2019. So we're moving all along from individual players just to teams as a whole right now. Number 10, starting off here. And by the way, some of this list, this will just make you feel good about our schedule, I guess. Because number 10 is Mississippi State.
Hmm.
Despite having their three defensive players taken in the first round of the NFL draft, rebuilding out a lot of positions here, 247 thinks Mississippi State can improve upon their 8-5 record first year under Joe Moorhead. Number 9, you got Arizona. Kevin Sumlin, still a head coach in college football.
Hmm.
He had a big struggle last year. However, you still have Khalil Tate at quarterback. One of the most dynamic quarterbacks in the entire country. Maybe people are thinking some big things. Number 8, you have West Virginia. It's going to be year one under Neil Brown from Troy. I thought it was Neil Brown. I almost called him something different for some reason. Number 7 here. Oh, the Mac is back. The return of the Mac. It's Mac Brown in the North Carolina Tar Heels.
Wow.
Still one of the most bizarre hires I've ever seen.
High hopes for Big Mac.
I mean, he coached there back in the day. He was a very successful coach there in the 90s. But, man, I think this is going to be a complete disaster.
Yeah.
How long had Matt Brown been out of coaching? 4 years? Maybe 5 years?
I'm not sure, but that's confusing to me.
If you're North Carolina, you're clearly a basketball school first, so football takes a backseat to that. So I don't know what UNC fans' expectations are for their football program every year. They are a program that's they're at least expecting a bowl game every year.
Okay.
They're not going to expect.
They didn't make one last year, did
no,
they?
No, they were 2-9 last year.
Yeah.
They finally fired Clay Travis's doppelganger, Larry Fedora. So they got rid of him. So as long as Mac's out there making bowl games, I guess it's okay. I've never been a huge fan of a lot of retreads when it comes to head coaching hires.
Mm-hmm.
This is one of the worst ones I've seen, at least from this logistically shouldn't make sense. Like, I just don't think it should. I don't know. Could prove me wrong, though. Could prove me wrong. 247 says that the ACC Coastal Division will be wide open this fall. So maybe in year one, you can upset some people, win that division. I guess that'd be really big. I mean, it is North Carolina football. I mean, that's probably the height of their expectations, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of the ACC, you got Miami at number 6. Post Mark Richt era, you have Manny Diaz taking over the head coaching position there. Manny Diaz is the inventor of the turnover chain,
mm-hmm.
which is still pretty cool. But yeah, I feel like Miami's in a position like we are in a way.
Yeah, they are.
It's just like, you know. It wasn't that long ago you were really good, but it's like you're not the worst of the worst, but you're just in this middle ground of, oh, let's hope this guy works out.
Yeah.
Moving on here, number 5, you have Auburn.
Okay.
People could be sleeping on Auburn, apparently.
Are people sleeping on Auburn? I wasn't.
I mean, they're coming off an 8-5 record.
Yeah, it's not great for them.
They'll be a ranked team. Gus Malzahn is always at the risk of being fired
forever
down the plains, it seems like. However, it says that Auburn has 7 months to figure out what it wants to do offensively prior to matching up with Oregon kicking off the season at AT&T Stadium. If they're able to beat Oregon, if they're able to be a really good Oregon team by all accounts, that should get the hype rolling again. They're going to have a brand new quarterback. Whoever it's going to be, it's probably going to be Joey Gatewood.
Mm-hmm.
If not Bo Nix, you got some young guys you're going to put in there. So maybe that's why people are sleeping on Auburn. Maybe people are thinking it's another 8-5 season for them, which 8-5, man, 8-5 might get Gus fired unless one of those A's is Alabama.
I agree.
Which they do have them in Auburn this year. And now we get to number 4 here. The Tennessee Volunteers. Why are the Vols a sleeper?
Don't sleep on us.
Why are the Vols a sleeper? Brad Crawford writes, Tennessee hasn't won an SEC East title in more than a decade, and when's the last time the Vols were picked to be a serious contender in a league dominated by Alabama, Auburn, LSU, Florida, and Georgia during that stretch? Jeremy Pruitt inherited a roster barren of explosiveness and premium talent, but that's changing in Knoxville, coming off a top 25 recruiting class in 2018, and you followed that up with the top 15 class in 2019 as well. The Nick Saban disciple and defensive guru showed flashes of turnaround in his first campaign with notable wins over nationally ranked Auburn and Kentucky. However, season-long offensive struggles kept Tennessee out of the bowl picture. However, they are putting a lot of weight on the hires of Jim Chaney and your other offseason coaching staff additions as well. Number four potential sleeper. I don't want to hear the hype anymore.
Yeah.
No, it's too soon. I'm getting nervous.
I know. We're, like, being talked about way too much.
Yesterday, ESPN FPI has us favored in 9 games.
Just crazy.
A predicted win total of, you know, you round it up, it goes to 8. Talking 8 or 9 wins. Mm-hmm. Talking potential sleeper. No, I don't want to be let down again because I'm going to be thinking about this.
Why do they do this to us?
And then when we're down at halftime, 24-6 to BYU. I'm going to go into I don't know. I'm going to just hide my crawl space, I guess.
I'm going to be very depressed.
I'm going to hide away from the internet. Top three here. Number three is Nebraska. I've been seeing a lot of love for Nebraska.
Yeah.
Potential Heisman dark horse and Adrian Martinez at quarterback. Number two is Missouri. You know they can't go to the bowl game.
Yeah, that's weird.
Yeah.
I guess they've got a pretty easy schedule.
Also, Kelly Bryant coming in has some hype behind
it. Yeah, you can never discount Kelly Bryant. Number one here, before we hit a break and do Mount Rushmore on the other side. Number one, TCU, Gary Patterson and the Horned Frogs.
Oh, man.
Really? Number one sleeper in the whole country?
Yeah, I could see it.
I wouldn't. I mean, they're not going to win.
A lot of people are going to sleep on them.
They're not going to win the Big 12, though. Either Oklahoma or Texas is winning the Big 12 this year.
Yeah.
I guess they could be good. I mean, you have a Hall of Fame coach in Gary Patterson. I guess they'll be good enough to get to a decently named bowl game.
Mm-hmm.
247 has them at number one, though. Number four for Tennessee. Garantano hype. Team hype today. I need to take
a break. Too much. This is too much for me.
I need to take a break here. Real quick, are y'all concerned about some of these expectations? I know it's not
I'm very concerned.
This is a national, everybody is on your bandwagon here, but this is still something that concerns me.
Yeah.
Why are these expectations on us already?
I don't know. I don't like it.
We're coming off 4-8 and 5-7. No.
Quit doing this to us.
Slow down a little bit.
Getting our hopes up and then crushing our dreams.
Still Mount Rushmore on the other side. We did 80s movies yesterday. We'll just keep with the theme. We go up a decade, though. 1990s movies is our Mount Rushmore on the other side. Stick with us here. Closing hour one when we come back here on Overtime. Getting back here on Overtime, about to hop into Mount Rushmore here, just because I was inspired by Stranger Things. We did the best movies of the 80s, Mount Rushmore, yesterday. We're just going to keep on with the movie theme here. Moving up another decade, it's the decade that brought us the internet, the O.J. Simpson trial, Monica Lewinsky, all that type of good stuff. It is the best movies of the 1990s. Let's get into Mount Rushmore. No, Will, are you on the...
Sorry.
Oh, no, it's okay. Overtime six, it's fine. My bad. My bad here.
Gotta have him ready.
90s. There we go! Let's start off with mine here. This was an easy list for me. Three of my favorite all-time movies were made in the 1990s. Starting off, Forrest Gump.
Yep.
One of my favorites of all time. 1994 American classic. Next up, you got Pulp Fiction, the movie that really, really put Quentin Tarantino on the map. John Travolta, Samuel L. Jackson, Uma Thurman, Bruce Willis, Christopher Walken, huge cast of characters. A movie that you gotta watch multiple times to really understand, but is iconic for sure. Next up, Goodfellas. Goodfellas from 1990. Ray Liotta, Robert De Niro, Joe Pesci. I think up there with The Godfather, that's your gold standard for mafia movies.
Yeah, I'd say.
It's a version of the American Dream, kind of. Goodfellas, always classic. And then finally, my favorite movie of all time. I've seen it probably close to 30 times. It's The Big Lebowski.
Yeah.
The Dude, Walter, Donnie, Jackie Treehorn.
Mm-hmm.
Shabbos, just a whole lot of stuff I can go on and on and on, but The Big Lebowski, cult classic turned into a classic in general. And who wants to go next?
I'll go next. First up for me, The Lion King. The GOAT Disney movie, in my opinion. I'm looking forward to the new live action of it.
You excited for that?
Yeah.
I am too.
I think it's going to be cool. Next up for me is also Forrest Gump. Love Forrest Gump. Next is Shawshank Redemption. I always stop and watch it whenever it comes on TV. I've seen it so many times, and I still love it so much. And then last for me is The Sandlot.
Ooh.
Shocking to me that it's 26 years old, The Sandlot. Like,
26?
26.
Oh, don't say that.
It's shocking, isn't it?
It really is, though. Good list. Will, you are up. Give us your best 90s movies.
Number one, I've got Toy Story. Classic.
One of the goats.
Number one is definitely the best by far compared to the other ones. They're all great, but one is definitely the best. Speaking of sequels that were not that great, I got Jurassic Park, number one, next. I don't like really any of the other ones except for the Chris Pratt ones now, but Jurassic Park, number one, is good. Armageddon, great movie. One of those movies that if you turn it on the TV and it's on, you have to watch it all the way through, no matter what.
I don't want to close my eyes!
That movie makes me cry every time I watch it.
Don't want to fall asleep!
The end. Oh.
And my last one is Independence Day, one of my favorite movies of all time.
Yeah. That's a good list.
A movie that was on pretty much all day. I forgot what channel it was, but it was on pretty much all day on the 4th of July.
The 4th, yep.
That's one of those must-watch 4th of July movies.
Yep. It was on my Mount Rushmore of patriotic movies.
I will tell you that the 90s was a decade for cheesy-ass movies.
It really was.
I mean, over the top, any type of way. Independence Day is such an over the top movie.
It is so over the top.
When you have when you got Randy Quaid sacrificing himself at the end. Oh, boys, I'm back. Armageddon is just there's no logic behind Armageddon. It's like, oh, what are we going to do? Well, instead of training astronauts to be oil drillers, we're going to train oil drillers to become astronauts.
Just throw them up there.
The fate of humanity is up to a bunch of oil drillers. It worked. It made a lot of money. It made a lot of money. Funny enough, Armageddon came out, what, 5-6 months after Deep Impact? Have you ever watched Deep Impact?
No.
It's the same damn movie.
Oh, my God.
It's the exact movie that came out first. You had a problem like that a few years ago when you had White House Down and Olympus Has Fallen. Just the exact same movie right there. But, man, 90s movies very over the top. Probably my favorite decade for movies in general.
I think so.
That does it for hour one of Overtime. We get hour two. Come up on the other side, 865-546-8200. Catch you when we come back.
We'd like to help you learn to help yourself. Look around you, all you see are sympathetic guys. Stroll around the grounds until you feel at home. And here's to you, Mrs. Robinson. Jesus loves you more than you will.